Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Cad Napsa.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and sadly, when I'm done speaking, you will not hear, I'm Jennifer Landa. Jennifer had to take this week off, but she will be back.
She will be back, and it is such a wonderful sign of the times that she's back for the news show with such regularity that we already feel the loss of her having to take a week off. So Jennifer will be back next week.
Yeah, absolutely, and looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it indeed. This is our look at Star Wars news, breaking news from a long time ago. It is definitely season of Kenobi. It's definitely where you're starting to see, you know, exclusive. Here's what might happen in the show. And we are trying to avoid that. Not for any grand statement on scoop culture, not our favorite thing, but just as fans, we want to kind of curate the news. We get so close to the release of shows and movies. So we'll have some news items here that might be speculative and a little spoilery. We'll give you that warning when we get to it, but a little fun discussion coming your way about some of the big Star Wars news stories this week. Before we do that, But as always, we want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And a little bit later, as always, we'll have our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. So Joseph, Jennifer's having her own Star Wars adventures right now. You and I, let's catch up. Where did Star Wars find you in your life this week?
Oh, yeah. It found me in lots of little places. My wife and I are still watching the Young Indiana Jones adventures, and they're all the Lucas re-edited all of them into this, you know, chronological order of you can feel the prequels building with the Rick McCallum. Trisha Bagar popped up as a costume designer. There's an episode with Pernilia August. It's like watching the prequels come into being. There's some early CGI shots in this one. Yeah. And the one we watched last night, a lot of the point of the Young Indiana Jones show was to be like directly educational. Like there's definitely some adventure, especially when Indy is like nine, he pretty much just wanders off he goes to fascinating, interesting places and wanders off and meets a famous person and worries his parents and repeat. But a lot of times it is just educational, and he learned about world religions this episode, and then he got sick, and then people helped him out, and it was like watching the Phantom Menace be built, because it was this like it was this young boy learning that at the heart of all philosophies is the idea that we are all connected and should help one another. And that's what matters the most. And then he falls sick in a foreign place where people would have no reason to help him, but they do. And it's just like, wow, this is Phantom Menace light.
I'm obsessed with this now, and I'm going to maybe have to start my rewatch here. You know, I remember watching that show, and I haven't really seen it since that time. And I've known, you know, McCallum and some of the other folks, and Oliver Ford Davies, I think you had said, was in one of the episodes, right? Mm-hmm.
The first one.
Pernilla August and everything, but the concepts and what George was working on, that's fascinating to me, that George, whether or not he was like, hey, I'm not saying he's like, this is going to help me make the prequels, but just that what he was putting into his programming even then, and how that theme, all those themes kind of just are a connective thread for him and his work. That's great.
Yeah, just how much the ideas of Star Wars are central to him, as well as the pulp adventure and all the things that we love. And lightsabers are cool, and air speeder cars, especially bright yellow ones, are cool and all that. But that to him, it is these big ideas that motivate it and matter. So that was a fun adventure. Then the other thing I wanted to mention quickly is I recorded some episodes of Star Wars Minute, a great podcast that we've been on in the past. Alex and Pete doing a great job. It's always super fun. This one was solo. And part of what was really, really fun about it is I don't think this is a secret that Alex is doesn't like parts of Solo. And it was, I think I knew that going in, and it was just, we just had some great conversations about, hey, why? I know this doesn't work for you. Why not? And then he'd explain. And then I go, oh, I get that, but here's why it does work for me. And I don't know that either of us changed one another's minds, but just like, that's all I want. You know, I don't mind disagreeing. And in fact, sometimes I find it fascinating, because to me, it's art, and there doesn't have to be an answer. We don't hold a vote. You know, there are real world metrics like box office and, you know, aggregate of, you know, reviewers and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, for me, that's just what it's about, is I want to be able to have conversations and share things instead of telling one another we're wrong all the time.
Yeah, the gamification of movie discussion, of which I helped produce some of it, is something that I don't think anyone, when this was all being built, I don't think anyone really foresaw some of these things that have popped up. But yeah, I always say life is not an episode of Movie Fights, and nor do I want it to be.
Yeah, it was a fun Star Wars adventure, because I always love just, you know, Star Wars Minute is analysis, but it's also just joking around. It's super fun to joke around about Solo and then just be able to appreciate the film in different ways and hear other people's takes was a ton of fun. So that was my Star Wars adventure. How about you?
Well, a couple one here, small one and big one. One, I have to apologize to you, Joseph, for sending probably an overzealous text message late on a Friday or Saturday night. I was... Grace and I, we should announce officially, we have added a new dog to our life, a little 5-pound chihuahua named Francis, Franny, Franny Cakes, Franny Bean, whatever her name, her nicknames will keep rolling up. Happened very suddenly. The force in life finds a way. Suddenly, we weren't really looking. We, of course, lost our dog Ratsy a couple years ago now, and this fell into our laps and happened very fast. And so we had this wonderful new dog, and we need to go to Target to get some training pads. You know how it goes. So I get there, and I do what I always do. And I'm just going to wander over the toy aisle, and I turn, and this particular Target I've been going to, it's been slim pickings. It's been sad Lobots literally on the shelf. And unfortunately, a bunch of sad Landos, like too many people not buying Lando figures there. Yeah. And I turned the corner, and there was some Landos, but there was a Tebow. There was, I think it was, I think it might have been L3. I think it was IG-11. Mm. And behind it was three Palpatines. This is the vintage 3 3/4. And I in my head, I'm like, I'm pretty sure Joseph either has this or has this on the way. But I took a photo and sent it to you just because I think I'm taking this one out of the package because it's got the hands that you can switch out with the lightning. Yep. And the look on his face is just this grimace, this groan, but also this joy at being so evil and just unlimited power. We always say that we have our weird relationship with Palpatine, the character we love and we love to root against. I think I need to display this one for all the world to see. It's a great Palpatine figure.
So you snatched it up. You got yourself a Palpatine.
I bought it. Doggy training pads, treats, and a Palpatine.
A little something for what did you say, Francis? Franny?
Francis, yeah. Franny Francis? Bean, Franny Cakes, yeah. Francis, yes.
A little something for Franny Cakes and a little something for Daddy. I saw that one recently pop up. You know, at this point, every website I go to, the ads have figured out, like, just show this fool action figures and he will be ours forever. So who knows what I would probably looking up a medical ailment and there was a pop-up ad like, check out Palpatine. I saw him and I was like, I don't know how hard he's going to be to find. So I ordered him online. I have him in a box. I'm working on a script right now that I'm really close to finishing, and he's my reward. I'm going to reward myself with some evil Palpatine, so I can't wait.
Oh, love it. It's that special kind of Star Wars joy, even now at 46, turning a corner and going, figure that I love.
That's so great.
The other thing, I had the opportunity, fortunate to be in attendance along with Grace for the wedding of Sam Levine and Rachel Cushing. A lot of you, I'm sure, know them if you're fans of the Schmodown or just fan of Sam's work and all this good stuff over the years. Great wedding down at the E-Bill of Los Angeles beautiful location where they filmed. They actually filmed a lot of things have been filmed there, but Mark Ellis was officiating the wedding and in the ceremony mentioned that this is where they shot Harrison Ford's big speech in Air Force One. So there's a connection. But anyways, afterwards, every wedding has like a little kid that steals the show, right? Like a 5-year-old that's a ring bearer. And this was the case. It was Rachel's nephew. I believe his name was Jeremy, but it was hard to tell because he was just running around having fun. So his father was Rachel's brother-in-law. Anyways, long story short, we're chatting with this dad, and he's like, hey, you know, I'm a fan, Ken, Pit Boss, yay. I even got your book. And then he proceeds to tell me that the sequels are trash, but it's okay. And then he said, hey, my son's a big fan. He watches the films. Can he ask some questions? And, you know, Joseph, you've experienced this, I'm sure, of our listeners. If you're the Star Wars person or you're known as a Star Wars fan, some parents do this a lot. Like, hey, can my son or daughter ask you a question? So cool. Call him over. And I'm expecting, you know, what are X-Wings or, you know, how something fun. I lean in, Grace and I lean in. I go, what's your question? He goes, why did Darth Vader kill Obi-Wan? And I just go, oh man. And his grandma's Rachel's mom looking at me, and I was like, well, I think Darth Vader gave in to hate and anger, and he couldn't let go of it, and he killed his friend. But I think on the other side, you know, Obi-Wan was doing something for Luke, and he was choosing to help and the greater good, and you know, I'm trying to explain it, and he's going, okay, okay. And I go, you got any more questions? He goes, how do you make a lightsaber? And I go, okay, that one I can do. That one I can do. You go to Ilum.
$150.
You go to Ilum. You pick up your crystal will find you, and Professor Huang will help you build it. And he goes, okay, great. And he goes back to running around. Well, the next day, you're joking, Joseph, but he went to Galaxy's Edge. So I'm like, oh, my answer's wrong. He's going to be like, that guy was wrong at the wedding.
He doesn't know how to build a lightsaber. You go to Disneyland. What's wrong with this guy?
What's wrong with this guy? So anyways, fun experience, but it was hilarious. And he was literally 5 years old, and just like, and he was upset by it. Why would Darth Vader do that? And you know what? That's a good question.
That is a very good question. Was he really bothering you that much? He just wanted to leave your Death Star house, right?
Yeah. Come on. You guys are buddies. Yeah.
It is so fun, that moment of not knowing, you know, we have a Star Wars question. Is it going to be something like, you know, what do you know the name of Mace Windu's droid, right? Because that's some, you know, kids have that action figure. They picked it up or whatever. Or suddenly it'd be like, how did Han and Leia make Ben? You're like, you never know what you're going to get, you know?
You never do. Liam the Shades, from the minds of children come the important questions of Star Wars and the important answers. So a lot of fun. That was my Star Wars and Life adventures. So Joseph, if you're ready, let's dive into some news.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Ian McDiarmid, he's still teasing us with more Sheev. Oh, wow. So we have discussed this previously, but this came up again. And I want to just continue to talk about it because it just kind of makes me excited as a Star Wars fan. Clearly, if I'm jumping for joy at Palpatine figures in a store. Ian McDiarmid was speaking at the Imperial Commissary Collectors Convention. Apparently, it's been around for a bit. That's the greatest convention ever. I don't quite know what it is.
It sounds like something to just celebrate those Starbucks to-go mugs that they have in the Imperial briefing on the Death Star.
But I gotta tell you, if you know, maybe this is where you and I need to go do a live Star Wars ranked on favorite Imperial officer moments. This might be the spot.
I just Googled the Imperial Commissary is, it says here, they are a Star Wars community focused on the growing and longevity of the Star Wars collecting hobby for future generations.
Okay. All right. We're going to head there next year. Look for it. I'm not making fun. It's just there's so many conventions now for so many years that you can't possibly hear or go to all of them. But this one, I was like, this is made up for you. You get McDiarmid. Is this what you had to do? It's like, oh, we're just Imperials. We're the Imperials over here. I don't know. It's just hilarious.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
But he was speaking there, and the Emperor himself says there's a certain show coming soon set right around the time I may have been considered to be very active. Whether or not you will see my physical body, I cannot comment on, but you will certainly feel my presence. So we have discussed this before, and we've discussed it in a lot of detail, this idea of Vader having a forced Skype call with his boss, a hologram, something like that. Who knows? Who knows what it could be? But as we race towards Kenobi and technically Andor, which would fall under this category as well. Joseph, has anything changed on your thoughts about Palpatine returning? How? Why? How much? What do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, I love just thinking of these Sheev teases.
Sheev is.
And I want unlimited Sheev. I want him to come back. I love the cheeky way that Ian McDiarmid talks about this. Like, whether or not you will see my physical body, I cannot comment on. It made me think of a couple things. I do still feel like a physical presence seems likely in Kenobi. I think hologram conversation with Vader, that might even fit some of this sort of cheeky, like, I recorded it over video. It's just my head, you know? In fact, you know, they did the makeup digitally and they stuck my face in a robe. I just did the performance, you know, on a Skype call. I think that's a strong possibility. I would love it if it really was he had an in-person, in the robes, in the makeup, filming. In particular, it just thrills me the idea of seeing live action Palpatine in the former Jedi Council room that is now the, you know, Imperial base, and just on screen seeing the power of Vader still being dressed down and judged in that same room where it all began when Mace Windu was rude to him.
There's something I really am on board with, this idea of just seeing McDiarmid roam around, whether it be the volume, whether it be a practical set, doesn't matter. Just roaming around those locations we're so familiar with, especially from a different era, the Revenge of the Sith era. To see him now, to see him maybe with Hayden, mask on, mask off, doesn't matter to me. Just seeing him with Vader, more than just a reunion of Revenge of the Sith, their Attack of the Clones, but just seeing him now and them all getting a chance to dive back into the juicier moments with those characters would be really exciting. But I'm still, yeah, nothing's changed. I still kind of predict, you know, the Skype call of Doom. But who knows? Who knows, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think the Skype call, the holo call, holo Skype of Doom is more likely than a in-person scene. That's a fantasy. I would love that, particularly that location. But I just think it really makes a ton of sense in Kenobi more than anything. We've talked about it a lot. But the thing that I was thinking about this week is it would be great to see Palpatine, you know, really hating Kenobi. We've talked a lot about that Lucas quote where Lucas says, yeah, Palpatine's mad that Kenobi damaged his prize. But I love the idea in the context of this show. Palpatine hates Kenobi and also knows Kenobi is a threat. Anybody who might be able to get through to Anakin is a threat. So seeing a little extra anger, right? Of like Vader reports, hey, I killed Eeth Koth, you know?
Yeah.
And Palpatine's like, two thumbs up, great. You know, random Jedi that I know you hate.
Yeah.
But your friend Kenobi, right? The way he brings it up in Revenge of the Sith, like all Jedi, even your friend Kenobi, he knows Kenobi's a problem, and Palpatine expressing that would raise the stakes of that, of this story.
I love that Revenge of the Sith moment. I love when you bring it up because it just highlights Palpatine's pettiness. One of our favorite little things about him, the little My Little Green Friend digs and everything. And just, yeah, the galaxy's going, it's on fire. Plus your friend Kenobi, he's an a-hole. Let's get him. Like, I love Palpatine's energy there.
Yeah. And even earlier in the film, when he's got Anakin to kill Dooku for him and give in to his anger and praising him for it, it's like, you don't really need to go back for Kenobi. You know, it's just, it's a big point. I think a big emotional point of Palpatine succeeds by dividing people. And he knows that Kenobi is this even 2% risk of getting through to Anakin.
Yeah. And that shot, it went around. I love when the internet either uncovers things, rediscovers things, discovers them. It doesn't matter to me. I love when it gets put out there in that shot of the end of Phantom Menace at Qui-Gon's funeral. You got Palpatine, you got Anakin, you got all these characters between the two of them. And then the shot at the end, Revenge of the Sith, Vader in the outfit and the mask and Palpatine, and there's no one between them. It's like, yeah, that's exactly what the game plan is. Exactly when you track Palpatine and these little victories and these little dark things he does along the way. I love that. Again, love that about the character, even though we want him to lose every time.
Yeah, exactly. And in this one, you know, he'll think he had a victory, but Kenobi will be setting up the hope. Andor always comes up as a possibility. And with this cheeky answer about whether or not you see my physical body, but you will certainly feel my presence. A thing that struck me for Andor is it would be great. I would love propaganda in the background.
Like, yes.
I don't know if it makes as much sense to me to see him as a character. Like, you absolutely could. But if Cassian's like working low level Imperials to try to work up the chain, right? Absolutely, you could see, you know, some Moff reporting to Palpatine. But I'm much more interested in happened in Clone Wars, but for a different era of, you know, Andor's hiding out and there's just some screen with the manipulated image of Palpatine talking about how great the Empire is.
Yes, it makes you think of even some stuff in the Battlefront 2 story mode when you're going around Vardos and some of those places. I think, look, if I had to choose one, I'm going to always go towards Kenobi if you're actually going to bring McDiarmid in and there's such emotional punch behind that decision. But yes, it really would work for Andor as well. I'd be fascinated to see Ian McDiarmid play Sheev in a way again in Andor with what you're describing, the propaganda, the holograms, a big speech, you know, going around a planet. Maybe he's just up there like, hello, welcome, you know, thank you for landing at LAX. Thank you for serving me. Like, even if it was something like that, it'd be fun to just see him play that side of the character in this modern era.
Yeah, strength, order, happy Empire Day.
you have selected Diet Cola. Press again. So far, everything teased has been Palpatine in small doses. At least that's what you gather from McDormand's words and just kind of the reality of the situation. It is the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. But that got me thinking even more, Joseph, of, could we ever see a show or a series spending more, quote, quality time with the galaxy's big evil? I know young Palpatine or something like that might be on a wish list. And it is kind of for me to, but I'm talking about the Emperor as we know him, McDormand. Would it work? Do you need Vader and Sheev, a lesson in self-hate? I don't know. Do you need that kind of series, a special 2 hours? Taking aside, I'll put the caveat out of, we understand some folks might want to go to new eras, and I think we're still going to get that chance. But I just, would you ever want to, could you see that working? I guess is even more the question of a little bit more time with Palpatine.
Yeah, I mean, I would always love for there to be a reason to spend more time with Palpatine. The young Sheev thing is interesting to me. You know, I think some of what the Darth Plagueis book dived into, the idea of sort of like this young man balancing his rising political career with his Sith training. I love those ideas. And there's a part of me is like, yeah, a one-off movie or a, you know, 4-episode series, you know, with with old Sheev narrating the young Sheev adventure. I'm so intrigued by that, but I'm also really feel like there does need to be some balance of light in all Star Wars. And I know some fans disagree, and I respect that. That they're like, well, look, there's plenty of hope in Star Wars. Why can't we have, you know, one show that's just, you know, really leaning into the evil? And I get that. But there's a part of me that's just like, I always want a little light. And that's what, for every, like, could we focus on Sheev? I'm like, yes, but where do you get a little bit of hope? So the other idea I would have is a joke title, but How I Escaped My Father, a series that's, centered on Rey's dad, but you get plenty of Sheev time. It's all hanging from a hook on Exegol. But it would be fun.
Yeah, no, look, I'm with you on that. And I don't think maybe 5 years ago or even less, I might have been like, no, take me, definitely young Sheev, all that kind of stuff. But I'd want to learn a little bit more. I don't know if I ever want to learn more of his fall other than he fell, because I don't want any excuses made for him. I want it to be lessons. If it's choices he made, and he's unapologetic and he is the big evil. You know what I mean? I don't want to ever... Mm-hmm. And I'm not even suggesting they would do that, but I like Palpatine as that. There is no what we got with Anakin, which is, hey, how do good people go bad? I don't necessarily need that. And that's a big thing with George. That's a big thing with the prequels. I don't need that for Palpatine. He is what he is, the big evil. So I would like quality time, but it just to remind us all that he is what he is. Maybe that's the title of the series. He is what he is, the Palpatine story.
I is what I is. Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the headcanon that I like, and I feel like sort of for me, what I value about Star Wars storytelling is no one is born just great or just evil. Everyone has choices. And I think what I'm fascinated with by Palpatine as the ultimate evil is he is somebody who has made his choice and nothing is going to turn him back. Unlike the story that we've seen with Vader and Kylo. I like that being in my head canon that there's some weakness, there's some fear, there's something that broke him, and he made a choice and he never ever turned back. And that's what's heroic about Anakin and Ben Solo, of they had the bravery to turn back. I like that as my head canon. I don't know that I'm chomping at the bit to see that story.
Yeah. And again, maybe even 4 years ago, I don't know, I would have been like, yes, show him being mean in elementary school. Like you, I know that's probably there. I think there's other places to shine the light, but we love Palpatine. I love seeing his plans and how it affects everyone. And then I love studying what it means for other people and how they can overcome that. I'm with you. A little bit of a little more light, but hey, we always enjoy some more Palpatine. Any final thoughts on Palpatine as we approach Kenobi, sir?
Yeah, I was going to ask you a question. So the Tales of the Jedi panel, caused some stir last week. In the panel describes it as a discussion of an anthology of shorts. So, you know, we will see exactly what that means. But I think we know what the noun short means.
Yes.
I think it's going to be a smaller thing rather than like full-blown half-hour animation. Yeah. But that said, How would you feel if something like Tales of the Jedi was narrated by Sheev? And like we, the audience, saw heroic moments of Jedi, but Sheev was like evil Rod Serling and like, look at these fools. Let me tell you about a time a Jedi did something stupid.
Yes. Yes. Similar to Inside Edition's Sheev's burn book that we talked about. Here's why. Maybe, and this is a complete like selfish thinking of Force Center and what we kind of talk about a lot here with our Justice for the Jedi, the campaign that you began a few years ago, Joseph, that we support here. If you go into failures or mistakes in the past of the Jedi and it's narrated and told from Sheev's point of view, maybe it will make you think more highly of the Jedi. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's like, well, Sheev can't be right. I'm starting to see the other side here. I think maybe that would be what I would like.
Yeah. If every episode is Sheev just sneering because the Jedi were kind and rescued somebody or someone was selfless and he's like, idiot.
Well, I mean, I was watching that Kenobi teaser again just because I just turned it on. It popped up on my YouTube suggestion page and I was like, I'm going to click on this. And that line for the Grand Inquisitor about the trail of compassion just is slowly becoming one of my favorite lines in Star Wars. I hope it makes the show. Sometimes you don't know what the trailers. It just is one of those things that is like makes you look at the Jedi, faults and all, foibles and all, mistakes and all, and just go, that is what they are or what they're supposed to be. And that's powerful in Star Wars. In life.
Yeah, and that is the dark side perspective, that it is wrong to help people.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty crystal clear.
Yep, it is. It is. So there you go. I could be on board with that. Tales of the Jedi as told by Sheev Palpatine. That is that for now. We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, we are going to recommend an audiobook for you. Joseph, what do we got today?
Speaking of the season of Kenobi, we are going to be diving into Brotherhood by Mike Chen, a Kenobi and Anakin adventure. I can't wait to get reading and discussing that one, Ken.
It is staring at me on my shelf, but maybe I could get the audiobook too, like you. If you want to go get your audiobook, download it today. Your free audiobook at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break on the other side. More news here on ForceCenter.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
All right, welcome back to Force Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet. This is where we talk Star Wars news. And like I said, they're looking at the stories. I don't want to go too far down one path. I saw, hey, this might happen in the show exclusive and good for that team. I didn't want to report on that. But I saw this story. It's from Entertainment Weekly, Joseph. And I love thought starters. I love conversation starters. And this is, like I said, from Entertainment Weekly, the Obi-Wan Kenobi series and its relationship to that line, if you will. But really, it's a few lines. So EW ran this piece of their ongoing interviews with Ewan McGregor, Hayden Christensen, and Deborah Chow. The discussion turned to the line said in A New Hope by Vader, "The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master." And they talked about if the show will change the context of the line. Everyone was vague, of course. Both Ewan and Hayden, kind of on the count of three, said maybe. But Ewan added, "It's fun. It's very clever how all those threads are created. It's like working backwards and forwards at the same time for the writers and for Deborah." So we'll start to dive in here, but I did want to read this one from Deborah Chow, Joseph. She said, "It was definitely something we were very mindful of. And for me, also taking on George Lucas's legacy, it's an honor to take these characters and be able to tell a new story with them. So I wanted to be very respectful to what exists and not change anything that George intended originally or anything like that." So let's dive into this. We have discussed this line and, like many people, have discussed the Return of the Jedi conversation with Vader and Luke that seems to contradict that line in A New Hope, if you want to split some hairs. But what new things are we looking forward to discovering about these lines, new context, and just your thoughts on this being part of the discussion, Joseph, going into Kenobi?
Yeah, I think it's totally understandable that it's a part of the discussion. This is something that is, a fascinating relationship between the audience, the story, and the creators, right? This kind of goes to the heart of even the special edition discussions of like, who owns these, right?
Yeah.
And people grew up with an interpretation of Han Solo based on the fact that he was being threatened to be shot, so he shot Greedo, and that's not a moral thing, but for Lucas it was, and literal decades of discussion. And I think we are on the precipice of another thing like that. For me, I'm really excited to have that flexibility to interpret. It certainly seems in the spirit of Lucas, who would look at things like, well, yeah, that Return of the Jedi line from Leia implies that she knew her mother and that she died when she was very young. I'm not going to let that hold me back. There's room for interpretation. So I think that's certainly in the spirit of Star Wars, just being open for interpretation, or in the spirit of the way Lucas has always dealt with Star Wars. I think the most important line in the original trilogy to this discussion is Yoda's, "You must unlearn what you have learned."
Yes.
Because for me, I think both of those key lines, the "when I left you, I was but the learner, now I am the master," and "Obi-Wan once thought as you do," I want to be respectful of it because it's tip of the iceberg storytelling. Those lines are open for interpretation. And as fans, we all filled them in and we've lived with them for years and years and years. And I think that's where the passion comes from. And I still see comments saying, "I'm excited for Kenobi, but I don't know if I really can be, because it's going to ruin that line. It's wrong," you know? And I think that's coming from a place of the line is open to interpretation, but I personally have interpreted this way for years. Yeah. And for me, that's the real starting point, is how do you as a fan choose to work with that relationship? Are you open to saying maybe the way I interpret it or understood it for years is open, or I've decided, no, it's closed, and that's going to be a barrier to me enjoying the show?
Yeah, well said. And I think there's a case-by-case basis thing that I kind of look at with this, where I think I've talked before about when the comics launched again in 2014, and right away Luke was kind of standing before Vader not too far after the events of A New Hope. And that one didn't sit well with me. But over time, any anger or awkwardness I felt towards that just kind of dissipated and went away. It didn't take away from Empire for me, which at the time is where I kind of got in my head about it. So I understand it. I really do understand some folks, and I've seen some hardline stances on there on Twitter, believe it or not, of like, nope, nope, they can't meet. That's not what it said. But I think, and I think for years, and you're right, the headcanon starts to become fact in our head, and maybe we can forget that again on a fan by fan, case by case basis, where I absolutely thought Mustafar was the last spot, or even before I thought of Mustafar, I just thought of some volcanic planet mentioned in a book, right, where that was it. It made a lot of sense. And then the reality of that's kind of what George was dealing with in 76, 77, while he was putting that movie out, not knowing what he would get a chance to tell. So the spirit of what if and why not is big with George, as we've discussed before. And I do think by the time you really dig into Return of the Jedi, it's always worked, felt a little different to me. That conversation with Luke and Vader has always made me feel as there was something else. So that's just where I'm at with it. And so I'm open to it, but I really understand that other people won't be. But this is just also where we're at. We never thought we'd get to see any of this. Now we do. So I want to be open to it as best I can.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm open to it. And I also know that there are just going to be some fans who it is going to bother them, and it's going to be a discussion for a long time. And so it goes. I think for me, the Obi-Wan once thought as you do is a line I always loved from Return of the Jedi. And I always thought that, like, oh, that's so great. Cause we hear earlier in the film, right, that Kenobi's like, look, he's gone, you know? And then you backfill that with what Vader says, like, then you get this idea, like, Kenobi tried. And I remember that was one of the things walking on Revenge of the Sith, like, Kenobi gave him like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan once thought as you do was like, he basically walks down from the platform and is like, look, I'm kind of yelling at you. You say the absolute, and then, well, look, I gave you a chance.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, come on, didn't Kenobi give him more of a chance? So because of my, you can make that work. I've made that work in my mind of like, okay, Vader, upon reflection, Vader realizes Obi-Wan did not charge out of the ship, lightsaber ignited.
Yep.
He tried to talk to him. Didn't try very hard, but that was an example where I molded my interpretation of that line to what exists in Revenge of the Sith. But I was always open to what we're going to get in the show, because I thought it's more compelling, the idea that Kenobi would have really tried hard.
Yeah, and I like that, you know, in these two different eras we're kind of discussing. I think if you're watching in the 80s or you know, you're watching and have yet to take the deep dive into the prequels, it kind of works in A New Hope, and then you get the information in Jedi that maybe before that final confrontation they had to sit down and that it didn't work, right? And then it does change when we finally see that final confrontation. You're right, that was one of the talking points. And I think you're also right. I think Vader could be like, yeah, he tried. 2 seconds. He knew I was pretty cool. He knew I was badass. He didn't do it. But there's an example of the context starting to change even back in the day. And so oddly enough, again, this is from my point of view, I'm kind of excited to get some new context to the line, kind of excited to get what might be the answer.
Yeah. And I think for me, what they're talking about of working with that specific line, I think this is one of those lines that I have paraphrased in my head, even though, you know, I've watched the film a million times. Sometimes you get a line in your head not quite right. And I think a lot of times in my mind, that line has been, the circle is now complete when last we met. And, you know, once all this Kenobi conversation started, and frankly, trivia study,
yeah,
it really lodged in my mind, like, that's not what he's saying. He said, when I left you, I was but the learner. And I feel like there's room for interesting interpretation of when does Vader feel he left Kenobi?
Mm-hmm.
And I can really see that line being contextualized as Obi-Wan is trying to get through to Vader in this new bit of story. And really, Obi-Wan is portraying it as something bad happened to you, Anakin. You fell. You were made a victim of Palpatine. You were made a victim of the dark side. And Vader pushing back and saying, No, I made a choice. I rejected the Jedi. I rejected you. I left. And I was only beginning my journey in the dark side when I left you. And when I encounter you again, you know, in the Death Star, I am a master of the dark side.
Ooh, yeah. I love that. It's kind of one of the little things I hope to get from this scene or this confrontation, just this series in general, this idea that, I don't know, that I want to see this moment, or this emotional beat being about Vader not allowing Anakin to accept forgiveness. So that all the things you're kind of saying are from really Vader, like really him winning that war with Anakin of just like, nope, I did this. This is my choice. But really also being about Anakin not being able to accept forgiveness, not being able to move on from any kind of pain and shame and all the things he lost, a big Star Wars theme. So that Obi-Wan just knows without a doubt that he did what he could. He has done everything. And he himself can forgive himself and move on. I'm interested to see if that kind of emerges from this confrontation.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the fact that they're talking about it like that, it must have been a discussion, right? For Ewan and Hayden to say like, maybe instead of like, what line are you talking about? Right. It feels like the show is going to contextualize that line. And I think some people are going to love it. I think other people are really going to not like playing with that line at all. And so it goes. That's being a fan.
And so it goes. The circle of Star Wars life is now complete. So this is, I'll admit this, Joseph, this discussion, this part of the discussion here is a little bit more for, not for myself, where you're not involved here, but just, I had some thoughts about I was like, I need to poke my Star Wars brain here. We are pretty certain that we're going to get this quote unquote rematch of the century. And it's maybe on the marketing that may or may not be real, you know, we haven't confirmed that yet there, but we love discussing it. So a lightsaber duel, an actual fight, them together face to face. But can we predict what we might feel like if this much heralded rematch between Vader and Kenobi turns out to be something else than a actual lightsaber fight, like a dream, a force projection, a sit down dinner? What if it isn't what we might want it to be? Where does your mind go with that kind of thought?
I want it to be many things, but yes. I want one of the things to be a big lightsaber fight. And I would not make angry videos about it. I would not give in to my hate, but I would allow myself to disagree and be disappointed with the marketing department and say, this is a misstep because, you know, that shot is in the sizzle reel, you know, Kathleen Kennedy promoted the rematch of the century, right? That is not, it's not my dinner with Kenobi, right? I'd be happy with that. And I hope that is an element of it, but if the lightsaber fight just isn't there, I would think that is a failure of the marketing department to make people. It's one thing for us to be like, okay, we watched Force Awakens and we, the audience, have taken on that we believe the identity of Snoke is a big mystery to be solved. And then when it's not really there, we're annoyed. Like, okay, well, we filled some things in, right?
Yeah.
There's a picture of them fighting with lightsabers in the sizzle reel. That's not filling in.
Right.
That's the marketing department advertising a concrete event.
Yeah. And this is why I said this section is kind of for me to work through some things. I'm not predicting this is going to be the case. I kind of believe it all on face value. And you're right. It would be a big record scratch and a surprise. No surprise. No, this is not what we wanted. You set us up for a fight. So I do think lightsabers will cross. And yeah, you mentioned the concept art and everything. They're getting us geared up. But I just had this thought. It was just like popped in my head reading this interview. I was like, you know, it's like how many times did I go around going, Luke, don't worry. Luke's going to show up in the third act of Force Awakens. He's going to be there as lightsaber. Oh, Last Jedi, he's going to ignite the green, you know. And we know where now famously where some of those expectations took a lot of the fan base. And which, again, totally fair, totally okay to go that way. Then you can decide what to do with that disappointment or even anger. So, jokes aside, I think you're right. I'm intrigued by Vader and Kenobi, you know, just talking. I actually kind of want that moment. I don't think you bring Hayden back and Ewan back and not have them speak and talk about feelings, emotions before crossing sabers and while crossing sabers like that. I just think this was a moment where I took a little sharp intake of breath and was like, I got to slow down. I got to slow myself down just to remind myself that anything could happen at this point.
Yeah, I'm leaving myself real open for the sheer amount of Vader screen time, right? I think that this is going to be structured like a three-act movie, with the first two episodes kind of being first act, then second act, then third act. And I think we can see a little bit of Vader in the first and second act. And the third act is Vader versus Kenobi on multiple levels. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to keep myself realistic about the amount of Vader time. I love that you brought up a dream. Yeah. I would love to have Kenobi having Vader nightmares, because that just looks and sounds, that would look really cool, right? And you could, that would be a way to play with super scary Vader. I for the actual battle, I think what I really want, we've discussed emotional beats, but I think I want a Bespin structured fight. Like a big fight that travels, I guess Mustafar does too, but with more room for conversation, the way the Bespin one is, right?
I agree with that. Hab Saber will travel. Yeah.
So kind of a dinner, but mostly a fight. A moving fight banquet. The other thing I wanted to be sure to mention, because I watched the video that's attached to this article, is Ewan talks about being on set and seeing Hayden's face. And he says Anakin multiple times, which I don't think is a shocking revelation. I've always felt casting Hayden Christensen means some helmet off time in some form or fashion. Yeah. I really am hopeful. I know there are rumors, maybe some leaks that I haven't clicked on. I really think at least one flashback would add just so much emotional depth and be great to see.
Yeah, or you know, Obi-Wan stumbles into Vader's meditation chamber, and they have a really awkward, you know, Vader's in a towel going, ho, give me a minute, occupied, and they have a conversation around it there.
To knock, Kenobi.
This is maybe perhaps a deeper question, not quite a Star Wars rank, so just toss a couple out there, Joseph, but what are some of the other times that, you know, maybe you've enjoyed that new context, different perspectives, and additional information in Star Wars storytelling?
I wrote down like four, but I'll limit myself to two. How does that sound?
List away.
Boba Fett as a traumatized child in Attack of the Clones. I think I've been thinking about a lot because of the Book of Boba Fett discussion. Honestly, because what we're talking about of Palpatine and thinking about what Lucas's intent really is with Star Wars beyond the fun and the cool. It seems like Lucas loves creating or having a hand in creating, directing others to create cool, badass things, right? And there's a great documentary of Under the Helmet about the whole creation of Boba Fett and evolution. And then Lucas has got that very George Lucas line of like, what can I say? People like the bad guys.
Yeah.
So the idea that he would go back and attack the clones and say, nobody's a mysterious badass. Everybody makes choices, and sometimes they come from trauma. And even in Attack of the Clones, when I could almost hear the eyes rolling in the theater, because people who had grown up with the original trilogy with mysterious badass Boba Fett did not want him to be a child with reasons. And even then, I loved it, and that recontextualized the character for me.
That's a great example, and one that was pretty well discussed at the time. a lot of discussions at the Chili's bar with me and my friends about
And then the other one for me is in Rise of Skywalker, Leia's Jedi training, having a lightsaber, the idea that both she and Luke really took this seriously of you have that power too, and that she pursued it and questioned it and made a different choice, and everything that was then done with the legacy of her having a lightsaber and really making it the Skywalker twins are the legacy, not Luke and oh yeah, Leia too, the Skywalker twins. That for me was beautiful.
Oh, that's a great answer. I mean, we might need to finish your list here, because I'll toss a couple out. I do love, and it's weird, I don't know if I 100% love what I saw, but I love the end result, and I love the emotions. I'm so much about the emotions of Star Wars, of loving Star Wars, and that kind of like that fist pumping moment or the tears, anything like that's where I really gravitate to when I'm discussing Star Wars. And the Kessel Run. I think we all knew we were going to get it. It was all there. And then that's back when the movie was even first announced and the trailers and everything. And to see it was nothing like I dreamed about as a kid, or, you know, read about other people's opinions, or even read any other versions. It just was nothing like it, including a creature, including this and that, and including that it's more distance than time. But that was a longer discussion we all grew up with. But to finally get it, and to see it and to know that, hey, yes, some of the tension in this scene might feel like it's undercut because you know Solo's okay at some point, but it doesn't mean someone else on the ship ain't going to go. I don't know that at that point, but just to when it ends and they get to Severin and he pops out and he's kind of bragging about it and the great line of, you know, well, if you round down. The first time I saw it, and I think you were with me in that theater, Joseph, if you remember, it's a cynical press screening. People applauded. Mm-hmm. And there was just some energy to it, and I go with that. So even though it was a case of I never thought it went like that, that Kessel Run was different than anything I dreamed of. It wasn't just about me being happy with the result. It was just how it made me feel I couldn't deny in that moment. And that's why I love that one.
Yeah, I think it was so great because it recontextualizes it to me from just a cool thing that Han did because he's the greatest pilot, you know, right, in the galaxy at that time, you know, arguably. The tension in that scene is Han has spent the entire movie saying, hey, I'm this weird bag of utter ignorance and cocky hope. Yeah. And everyone going, it's not going to work. Here's why you can't do X, Y, or Z. And what's at stake is not will they escape, because they will. It's is Han going to be proven right the first time that he gets to truly be behind, you know, the controls of this ship that represents his dreams of being a pilot and of being in control of his own life? Does this weird Han Solo magic of half absolute talent, half hope, and a third half of hubris, does it add up to success? And yeah, the answer is yes in the Kessel Run, and it makes it about his character.
Yeah, and tracing it from that, I've got a good feeling about this, to the moments on Severin, and then going the rest of his life where he probably, even if things continue to fail for him, he's like, no, I'm good. I get out of situations, and it might only be that situation. But it's in his soul, like, no, I had a good feeling about it and it worked out. Nothing else has really worked out the way I planned, but no. And that's not even true. But you know what I mean? I think you're right. I love that energy. I think I love that emerges from that sequence.
Yeah. And just looking back at how messed up the Falcon is in that, like, that Han's, everybody else is like, we barely made it out of there alive. We really shouldn't have been able to do it. And he's looking at it as his glorious success. That's Han Solo.
It's the best. Other quick ones for me. I've mentioned this before so many times, but I love when I get a chance to bring it up again. And it's Madeline Rue's short story Eclipse from the first From a Certain Point of View, which is Bail and Breha Organa's final moments. It's some of the more heart-wrenching, but at the same time uplifting bits of Star Wars storytelling. And this is what I mean, like additional information, just the context. I can never watch New Hope and see Alderaan destroyed and not think of that moment. And I know those books are, they went from, oh, canon adjacent, soft canon. I know there's some room to play. That one is written down in my soul as what happened. And I highly recommend someone, if you haven't had a chance to dig into that one, Eclipse by Madeline Rue. What's the other two on the list, Joseph? We can toss them out here.
Okay. Just the existence of Satine and Kenobi having a relationship. Like, that's one of those things where it's not in direct, you know, there's not a line in the prequels where Kenobi's like, I've never had a girlfriend, you know?
Yeah.
There's nothing that it's in tension with, but it's just that additional information that this happens. It's natural. How do you navigate it? How do you feel about it? What it showed us about Kenobi's character. And then the fact that Satine's character is just awesome. So Kenobi and Satine is a different perspective on Kenobi. Additional information. Other one for me that I wanted to shout out is that Rise of Kylo Ren comic book that I cannot shut up about because there's just lots of great details in there. But the one that's really powerful to me is this horrible dark side ritual that the Knights of Ren say that in order to join their sort of version of the dark side, you have to have, I can't remember how it's phrased. I didn't have time to look it up, like the best kill or, you know, specific kind of kill. But specifically, the idea is killing someone that you, the murderer, don't want to hurt, really, because it's easy. Yeah. To hurt somebody that you don't know or that you're angry about or is attacking you, but to prove you're truly free, you know, quotes, free, and dancing with the dark side, you have to take a life that you will hurt you to take. It's such a great setup for why Kylo is trying to force himself, trying so hard to free himself of this pain. and free himself of the past, which is all just, you know, horrific lies. I maybe should have ended on a happier one, but I think it just adds a lot of, it adds detail. Everything that I'm talking about is in the film, The Force Awakens, I think, but it adds detail and perspective.
No, I love a great choice there. And yes, I know sometimes we both have our favorite things we love to discuss, favorite stories, just because we just have such a passion for them. And I really think you're right to love that, the Rise of Kylo comic series, the 4-issue run. Check it out. Also, final one for me, I will toss one that is about hope. And it's weird to think it is new context, additional information. It's all the things we're discussing. It changes a perspective that I had growing up as a Star Wars fan, but it kind of was already there. My beloved Return of the Jedi novel does address this when describing Mon Mothma, but it's just this idea that is in Rogue One, even in the Star Wars Rebels animated show, that the rebellion wasn't immediately unified, and the rebellion wasn't like, hey, y'all want to take down the Empire? Cool, let's go. And you can watch New Hope and get that feel. And if you're seven like me around that time, you're thinking, hey, the good team, the bad team, and all's well. But I love that just kind of the story of the rebellion struggling to find its footing, struggling to find momentum, struggling to find support, Mothma's speech, all those kind of things. Radisson is coming out of hyperspace. It means more to me to know that there was different ways to do this, different perspectives. They struggled to find the way forward until they finally knew, hey, we got to take action. This is where we're at. I think I really enjoy that the new Star Wars stories have done that to that rebellion story.
Really, really agree. And I think an idea that I go to in that whole long story, that tapestry that's in many different places in the Leia Princess of Alderaan book, to see how long and how hard Bail and Brea and other early rebellion figures are trying everything to make it not violent, right? To not make it a war.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And then now we get Norja Bell. So, you know.
Yep. Nor Jabel. He's my whole list, really.
There it is. So out of that one little wonderful little interview in Entertainment Weekly, we discussed a lot of wonderful things there. That is our look at Star Wars news. But before we leave, we do want to take a look ahead to Star Wars Pass. And at the end of the week, we got a This Day in Star Wars History. That's a fun one to kind of look back on. And this one is on May 8th, 2008. The trailer for Star Wars The Clone Wars debuted on television and in theaters. Specifically, they did not say online, which even though online existed, different kinds of promotion back then. We know our relationship with the movie then and now. We've discussed it a lot. But what is the relationship to this trailer, Joseph?
I really enjoyed it. I'm sure I saw that trailer, but I had no memory of it. It was really fun to see. Yep. And now, you know, because we've rewatched that movie for the Clone Wars report that we do, but also I've rewatched it multiple times for trivia contests. I know that movie so well now. It's funny now to see that trailer and go, that's that shot. That's this scene, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you. Watching the trailer, first of all, it's, again, 2008 is even a different time in terms of trailers and the art of, I love the art of trailers, and they've gotten better and better and better in just movies and overall. And yeah, you can get into debate on what they give away and all that kind of stuff, but you know, not here to discuss that today. But this trailer's paced a little differently. Like the setup just kind of stops. It's just a series of action shots. But going back to that time, I'm with you. I don't even remember this trailer. I kind of remember parts of it. And I was confused. I had really unplugged a bit from Star Wars. And I was, you know, still buying the toys here and there. Still a fan without a doubt. Never not been a fan, of course. But I had disconnected, perhaps to protect myself, not because of the prequels, but just the idea that it was done. Star Wars was done again. And I just needed to, all right, well, that was fun. Let me go protect my soul a little bit. Then surprised and then confused that Star Wars was back in any way, but back like this. I'm not even commenting on what the quality of the animation or anything, but just like, this is in theaters? What? And I was confused by what I was seeing.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it was definitely like Lucas was like, I did it. I finished the Skywalker saga. But then there was also the rumblings of the live action TV show, which I was really excited about. I had loved the Gennady Tartakovsky Clone Wars animated series. And I'm sure when I first heard about that, it was like, oh, they're doing more of that. And then I'm sure part of it was just like, what's this, right? I mean, because this was you know, absolutely breaking ground early in CGI, right? Like, they're doing a Toy Story Clone Wars, you know?
That's fascinating way to look at it. And I would be interested, anyone out there listening, we talk about the different generations and different entry points into Star Wars. We obviously know there's a giant Clone Wars generation. So I'm just wondering if any of you out there were seeing this for the first time, no matter what age you were at, and just being like, oh my God, what is this? Or, oh, that Star Wars thing. I'd be very curious about the perspective of on this trailer, not the series, not the movie, but this trailer and what it might have done for you there. Now, looking back now, is there anything in the trailer you mentioned, seeing some of the things we now know because we're familiar with the movie, but is anything in the trailer you wish you had appreciated a lot earlier in your Clone Wars journey, like, say, May of 2008?
Yeah, I mean, I was excited to see the movie because I also had that, like, there should be a Star Wars movie every 3 years. 2008, yeah. Great. And I went and saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
In the trailer, I think there are a couple of shots now of like, why wasn't I more excited about that great shot of, yes, you know, Anakin with the shadows of the ribs on, which sounds like he's at a barbecue, of the big beast ribs on Tatooine. The shot of Kenobi and Ventress fighting with the big moon in the background on the bridge on the monastery at Teth. All the clone action, like there's a lot of great shots in there of action it's weird for me to look at back now. Like, why wasn't I more excited? Like, I was excited, but yeah, I don't remember this. The thing that I wish I had appreciated more is specifically the words General Kenobi, which are in the trailer, and that should have been a door for me to go like, oh, this is what this is. I've read about and seen a documentary discussion how Revenge of the Sith was supposed to begin with 7 battles on 7 worlds. But Lucas had to compress everything. He wanted to show more of the Clone Wars, but he had to focus on this story of Anakin. And now this is exactly the kind of storytelling that I get excited about and that I want to champion on the podcast of Star Wars' tip of the iceberg storytelling. And when something, a larger story is suggested, sometimes it's really great to have the room to see it in this movie, this trailer. Now, when I look at it, it's so clear of like, of Lucas just going like, I didn't get to tell the actual Clone Wars.
Yeah.
So let me roll up my sleeves and have fun telling you that story of when, you know, General Kenobi served Leia's father in the Clone Wars. Do you not want to see that?
Yeah.
And that's what this trailer is screaming to me. And you know, when I eventually saw the movie, I didn't quite understand that's what it was. I was like, why are we going back to these beats? And that's the glory of the Clone Wars series. And I think the trailer is pretty good at communicating that.
Yeah, it is. And there's some moments there standing before Jabba. There's Kenobi standing before Jabba. Like, that's just kind of cool in that, like, oh, okay, we're going to things I know, which sometimes can be the path to, you know, more appreciation for the Star Wars thing you're watching there. You mentioned some of the great shot, like the lats flying toward Teth.
Yeah.
I love the lats in Attack of the Clones. A lot of people love the moments when the camera's kind of behind them and the whir of the weapons loading and everything, just in terms of pew, pew, pew. It's really good.
Yeah.
And that would have been like, oh, exactly. Kind of, it's like the smaller version of what you're talking about, Joseph. Like, oh, more of that thing I liked in Attack of the Clones. That's interesting. I put this one at Kit Fisto and Plo Koon standing ready, because then it's like, oh, we're getting more Jedi. They're not wiped out. Order 66 yep. Don't happen. That'd be kind of interesting. And then the Ahsoka on the walker, the ATTE, as she's going up the monastery. I wish I appreciated them. And this is my memory of the trailers murky at best, but I do remember a clip going around of the first time, and I know I've talked about on the show before, the first time I saw that guy named Dave Filoni, and he was in it like an editing bay showing this scene, and I didn't know what was going on. Again, we're going to see this in a theater. What's he saying? But the walker going up sideways again, I go to those little moments of just, oh, that's cool. I want to see more. And that will lead you to deeper things and more poignant moments in Star Wars. But that sometimes for a guy like me is like, oh, pew, pew, pew on the wall. Love that. And I just wish I had seen that in the trailer, then clap like a slobbered idiot going, yay. Because it's such a wonderful sequence. It's so great in so many ways. And there it is right in the trailer. And I wish I had appreciated it then.
Yeah, it's a great action sequence. And just the way the whole thing is cut, it is really cinematic. It is really not just, you know, a Saturday morning cartoon with Ewoks having adventures, which was nice too, but different than a cinematic adventure of the entire Clone War.
Well, there you go. A drop for all of us to enjoy or enjoy later. May 8th, 2008. Looking back at the Star Wars, the Clone Wars trailer. All right, we are out of here today, friends. Always fun to come hang out with all of you, talk Star Wars news and more. Big week. We got some May the 4th stuff coming up. And as we get ready for Kenobi, just more discussions to be had about that crazy old wizard in the desert. Before we get out of here, let you know where you can find us. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can like our Instagram and YouTube page as well. We will be having, we're going to lock in the date. We're going to have another live Q&A prior to celebration is what our goal is. And also, speaking of, we don't want to forget to let you all know, we are going to be at Star Wars Celebration on Thursday, the Thursday, 2 o'clock time slot for the podcast stage. We'll be guests on Alex and Molly Damon's Star Wars Explained show. Going to be a lot of fun. Check that out. They have the information right now up on their Twitter page, and we'll have it out as well. You can find us on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. Podcasts available a lot of different spots. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at teampublic.com/user/Force Center, and you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. You can find me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com. Comedy dates upcoming June 4th at the Troubadour in Los Angeles. Big show. Ryan Sickler headlining, Mark Ellis hosting. And then I'll be at Flappers. It now looks, if you're a local Burbank Force Center fan, I'll be at Flappers. Information on the website soon. As always, we'd like to highlight charities, things of interest going on in the world. I am still supporting the globalgiving.org campaign for the Ukraine Crisis Relief Fund. This affecting the actual, supporting the people actually affected by what's going on there on the ground in Ukraine. You can go again to globalgiving.org/projects/Ukraine Crisis Relief Fund. Joseph, where can they find you? What do you got?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And for lots of other different kinds of comedy adventures, you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com. This week, I'd like to continue to highlight the great organization, the great activist organization, I guess you would say, Vote Forward. It's activist in that it is encouraging other people to use their power and act. You write letters to voters encouraging them to vote, nothing about how to vote, but just to vote at all, to use that power. The organization is called Vote Forward, and you can check out their website at votefwd.org.
Beautiful stuff. As always, I think that's something that Padme would support there. I can see Padme on that website going, vote, just vote. Good stuff indeed. So that is it for this week. So for Ian McDiarmid and all the ways we can dream up about seeing Sheev again, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit: credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.